Israel Folau wrote on Instagram that homosexuals, amongst others, would go to hell if they didn't repent for their sins. On May 19, Rugby Australia terminated Israel Folau's $4 million contract.
When we say rugby is a game for all, we mean it.
You cannot discriminate against an employee or in a contract on the basis of religious belief.
On June 6, Israel Folau announced he would be taking his case to the federal court.
There are consequences to your actions.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Botswana High Court strikes down same-gender sex ban, civil marriage equalized in Ecuador, and Folau's faith-based fouls tackle religious freedom. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 15th, 2019. Any discrimination against a member of society is discrimination against all. That was why Botswana's High Court said it was overturning laws criminalizing same-gender sex. The unanimous ruling was released on June 11th. The Southern African nation's penal code punished carnal knowledge of any person against the order of nature with up to 7 years in prison. The court found those sections unconstitutional. The judgment was announced by Judge Michael Laburu. He said that a democratic nation is one that embraces tolerance, diversity, and open-mindedness. What compelling public interest is there necessitating such a law? Human dignity is harmed when minority groups are marginalized. Laburu also chided opponents, saying, "Sexual orientation is not a fashion statement. It's an important attribute of one's personality. All people are entitled to autonomy over their sexual expression." A young gay man, known only as IM, filed the legal challenge. Attorney Gosego Letgoe argued that the penal code provisions limited IM's ability to interact with other gay people for fear of imprisonment. Botswanans from across the country filled social media with their celebrations. Anna Emolai Chalmers of Lesbians, Gays, and Bisexuals of Botswana called the ruling incredibly life-changing and a step towards restoring our dignity as human beings. More than half of some 70 countries on the planet that still outlaw consensual adult queer sex were once British colonies, according to The Advocate. Botswana was one of them. Neighboring Angola decriminalized gay sex earlier this year. In Kenya, however, the High Court upheld statutes outlawing consensual adult same-gender sex last month.
Ecuador's Constitutional Court has declared that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples is unconstitutional. The judge's 5-4 vote on June 12th also confirmed that the Inter-American Court of Human Rights' November 2017 ruling applies to Ecuador. That decision required all countries in the region to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. The court ordered the country's National Assembly to make the necessary changes to applicable laws. Efrain Suria is a member of one of the two plaintiff couples. Suria told Al Jazeera that the ruling is a joy for our entire community and for Ecuador, and implored other queer couples to enjoy the happiness that comes from being equal like anyone else. In 1998, the small South American country became one of the first on Earth to include LGBTQ anti-discrimination provisions in its constitution. Queer couples have been able to enter into less-than-marriage civil unions in Ecuador since 2015. It's not clear at this point just when gay and lesbian couples will be able to actually walk down the aisle, but the flower petal pathway has been cleared. Ecuador will join other South American countries, including Argentina, Brazil, and Colombia, that have opened civil marriage to same-gender couples.
Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, is defending his country's executions of gay people. Zarif's explanation came during a joint press conference with Germany's visiting foreign minister in Tehran on June 10th. Paul Ronsheimer is a gay journalist from the German tabloid Bild. He later told The Washington Post that his American boyfriend in Berlin had helped him formulate the question before the news conference. Ronsheimer asked Zarif, "Why are homosexuals executed in Iran because of their sexual orientation?" Sarif first criticized human rights violations in the U.S. and Israel before responding, "Our society has moral principles concerning the behavior of people in general, and that means that the law is respected and the law is obeyed." Shadi Amayin is an Iranian writer now living in Germany. She told Deutsche Welle Farsi that she was outraged by Sarif's comments. Amayin said, "Humiliation, repression, and sexual harassment of a particular social group should be viewed critically and prohibited by law." Under Islamic law in Iran, expressions of same-gender affection can be punished by floggings for minor violations such as kissing in public. Flagrant violations can bring up to the death penalty.
German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas came under local fire for not addressing the issue at the press conference. A ministry spokesman later told Bild that no religious, cultural, or ethnic tradition justifies state persecution, especially the execution of homosexuals. In Iran and seven other countries worldwide, homosexuals face the death penalty. That is inhuman and completely unacceptable. Openly gay U.S. Ambassador to Germany, Richard Grinnell, also strongly criticized the Iranian foreign minister's statements. Grinnell told the country's press agency, DPA, that Iran should honor the world body's Universal Declaration of Human Rights if they want to be UN members at all. The criminalization of homosexuality plainly violates this declaration. While it's not possible to know the exact number, human rights groups believe that several thousand people have been executed for homosexuality in Iran since the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
The Vatican issued a statement this week about how Roman Catholic school students should be educated. It rejected the concept of gender fluidity and, by extension, the existence of transgender people. The document is called Male and Female, He Created Them, Towards a Path of Dialogue on the Question of Gender Theory in Education. It condemns calls for public recognition of the right to choose one's gender and also rejects marriage equality as in direct contradiction of the model of marriage as being between one man and one woman. The document establishes nothing especially new in church doctrine regarding LGBTQ people. It does recommend that Roman Catholics should have a dialogue about gender identity with those who believe in non-binary possibilities and should not discriminate against people who identify as transgender or gender fluid. Inclusivity advocate Reverend James Martin was among several individuals and queer supportive Catholic groups to express disappointment in the latest pronouncements. The Jesuit priest told the New York Times that anyone who thinks that being transgender is a response to ideology has not spoken to many transgender people. Martin went on to say, "People do not choose their gender, as the Vatican claims. They discover it through their lived experiences. The church should respect and encourage this process of discovery, because it is a process by which individuals discover the wonderful way that God has created them."
The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has ordered a lower court to reconsider her ruling that Donald Trump's ban on transgender military service is unconstitutional. The appeals court set aside Seattle, Washington, U.S. District Judge Marsha Peckman's ruling that the ban likely violates the constitutional rights of current and would-be transgender service members. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit did not rule on the case's merits. They determined that Peckman had not given enough deference to the military's revised assessment of the situation because the 2018 policy appears to have been the product of independent military judgment. The 2017 policy that military service should be open to qualified transgender enlistees was the result of a thorough Pentagon study concluded under President Barack Obama. However, Mark Joseph Stern points out in a June 14th analysis piece on Slate.com that the Ninth Circuit panel also concluded that banning trans people from military service is discriminatory and constitutes sex-based bias. The decision said the proponents of the ban must have exceedingly persuasive justification, one not hypothesized or invented post hoc in response to litigation. Thus, Peckman is almost certain to conclude that the ban remains unconstitutional. Peckman was one of four federal judges to declare the ban on transgender people's military service to be unconstitutional. In January, the U.S. Supreme Court lifted the last of the lower court injunctions preventing the policy from taking effect. Even though the ruling allowed challenges to the policy to continue in lower courts, transgender people have been denied enlistment since the ban took effect. And talented, honorably serving trans troops are, for the most part, being slowly squeezed out of the U.S. military.
And finally, we told you here last week about the Trump administration forbidding all U.S. embassies and other foreign outposts from flying the rainbow flag to observe the traditional LGBTQ Pride Month in June. Flying the rainbow flag during Pride Month had become routine during the 8 years of the Obama administration, so this appears to be an especially petty Trump reversal of another Obama-era policy. Vice President Mike Pence struggled to defend the rainbow flag ban during an interview this week on NBC.
Look, as the president said on the night we were elected, we're proud to be able to serve every American. And we both feel that way very passionately. But when it comes to the American flagpole at American embassies and capitals around the world, having the one American flag fly, I think, is the right decision.
Some U.S. diplomats are finding ways to get around the policy or even directly defy it. The facades of the U.S. missions in Seoul, South Korea, and Chennai, India, are partially hidden behind large rainbow flags. Photos and videos released by the embassy in Kathmandu, Nepal, appear to show the rainbow flag prominently displayed on the outside of the building. The U.S. embassies in Santiago, Chile, and New Delhi, India, are being bathed in rainbow-colored lights. Several ambassadors have tweeted photos of themselves in local pride parades or standing outside embassies surrounded by employees holding up large balloon letters spelling out P-R-I-D-E. One unidentified diplomat slyly told the Washington Post that this is a Category 1 insurrection.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 15th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org. You can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
What am I gonna do? Burn for you.
Just what is religious freedom? Is it the freedom to practice the faith or faithlessness of your choice without government intrusion? Or is it the freedom to intrude on others based on your faith? Those questions are straining the laws in many Western democracies. In Australia, the case of a star rugby player is putting the law on trial. This Way Out, Sydney correspondent Barry McKay reports.
Who pops it out the back, Genia. Over the top, Israel Folau. He has got a double. Beal, Folau, dummies. Israel Folau has got a try at Wallaby goal.
Israel Folau is a New South Wales Wallabies player in the Australian Super Rugby. From a Tongan background, Folau was raised a Mormon and now attends an evangelical Assemblies of God church, and his father is a Christian pastor. He is now at the centre of a deep legal row with the sport concerning freedom of religious expression and keeping to Rugby Australia's code of conduct of inclusion for minority groups. I spoke with Australian queer activist Michael Barnett about the case, who is the moderator of a large LGBTIQ plus Facebook group called Proud to Be a Second Class Australian. Firstly, Michael, could you outline the Israel Folau case and how it has been relevant to the LGBTIQ plus community in Australia, especially as it has coincided with a recent federal election and has come hot on the heels of the successful same-sex marriage postal survey last year?
In March 2015, Israel Folau, playing for the New South Wales Waratahs rugby team, told ABC Radio that there was no room for homophobia in the game, amidst allegations of homophobic sledging originating from a player on his team, and denied there was homophobia in his club.
Rugby is a game of inclusion where everyone is welcomed in, and so, you know, me personally, I don't think there's any of that within this club and also in the game of rugby.
Skip forward to September 2017, during the height of the marriage equality debate in Australia, when Rugby Australia and the Qantas Wallabies declared their support for the campaign. Israel Folau, a devout Christian and playing for the Wallabies, announced on Twitter he loved and respected all people for who they were and their opinions, but he personally would not support gay marriage. In April 2018, Israel Folau wrote on Instagram that it was God's plan for gay people to go to hell if they didn't repent for their sins. Rugby Australia distanced themselves from Folau's comment, saying it was at odds with their inclusion policy. Despite this, they chose not to sanction Folau for his views. A year later, on April 10, 2019, when Tasmania passed legislation making it opt-in for birth certificates to list a baby's gender, Israel Folau responded on Twitter saying that the devil had blinded so many people and that they must repent for their evil ways. The same day he posted on Instagram that homosexuals, amongst others, would go to hell if they didn't repent for their sins. It was revealed that as a result of Folau's comments, he lost valuable in-kind sponsorship and financial support. On May 8, the Rugby Australia Code of Conduct panel ruled that Israel Folau committed a high-level breach of his contract, and the same day another major sponsor dropped Folau as a brand ambassador. Just over a week later, on May 19, Rugby Australia terminated Israel Folau's $4 million contract over a series of controversial Instagram posts. The CEO of Rugby Australia, Raylene Castle, said the decision was not about religion.
I've communicated directly with the players, all professional players, to make it clear that Rugby Australia fully supports their right to their own beliefs and nothing that has happened changes that. But when we are talking about inclusiveness in our game, we're talking about respecting differences as well. When we say rugby is a game for all, we mean it.
On June 3, hardline Conservative Senator Erica Betts referred Israel Folau's termination to Fair Work Australia, despite Rugby Australia claiming the termination was not due to his religious beliefs, but because of his views on gay relationships.
That morning, Senator Betts had the following to say on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's Radio National Breakfast Program.
The situation is in the Fair Work Act that there are provisions in it that say that you cannot discriminate against an employee or in a contract on the basis of religious belief. I was astounded by the number of people that just saw Rugby Australia as being very ham-fisted and, it would appear, motivated by the threat of a sponsor to withdraw money.
Cameron Klein, chairperson of Rugby Australia, had the following to say on ABC Radio at the time.
Senator Betts indicates that many, many people contacted him indicating that they disagree with the decision. Many, many people contacted me who said that these posts cause harm. They are individuals that gave me harrowing stories of growing up and dealing with their sexuality. Obviously, sponsors were not happy. But why weren't they happy? They weren't happy because in their organisations, they would have taken exactly the same action. They don't want to be associated with a sport that they feel doesn't live up to the values that they represent.
3 days later, on June 6, Israel Folau announced he would be taking his case to the federal court, claiming no Australian of any faith should be fired for practising their religion. He also said he was seeking up to $10 million in damages from Rugby Australia as a result of lost income and sponsorships.
I spoke to Giuseppe Carabetta, an expert in employment law at the University of Sydney's Business School, about the legal aspects of the challenge.
Because the application has been made under the unlawful termination provisions of the Fair Work Act, the presumption will be, and this is the Folau argument, as well, that the decision by Rugby Australia to terminate him was based on religious grounds. Now, that's a presumption under the Act, under these provisions, and there is a reverse onus of proof. What that means is that it will then be up to Rugby Australia to rebut that presumption if they can do so. Now, they will attempt to do so simply by pointing to the fact that, at least in their eyes, they terminated him based on a breach of the code because they considered his post to be homophobic and therefore against their values. As to who has the better case, I think it's a real chestnut, this one. However, I would say that on balance, I think I would favour Rugby Australia on this. The only qualification I would make is that Folau's side may question, when Rugby Australia argue that it was based on a breach of the code, they may question, A, whether there was a breach, and B, whether the code itself is legitimate in legal terms. In other words, whether the code is an overreach on the relationship.
Michael Barnett.
As I understand it, there's growing support across all sporting codes in Australia to protect and nurture LGBTIQ plus people. We've already seen this in rugby, tennis, cricket, Australian rules and hockey. No doubt other sporting codes will follow suit in time. To that end, I'd be surprised if a sporting body would tolerate divisive public comment from any of their players, particularly those who receive significant remuneration. However, I'd also be surprised if they attempted to stifle the fair expression of a player's religious beliefs in the public square. The issue here is finding a balance such that a person can uphold their beliefs whilst not vilifying or harming anyone else.
What are the arguments around freedom of religious expression that conservatives in Australia have raised in respect to this case?
It seems to me that religious conservatives want to ensure that sporting players can freely express their religious views without being held to account for any harm that may arise from them. Of course, no one's stopping a player from having their religious beliefs or from upholding them in their private lives. Similarly, no one's forcing a player to post their religious views on social media. The religious conservatives don't get worked up when sporting players are asked not to get drunk in public, not to break the law, not to engage in domestic violence, and not to vilify someone on the basis of their race or gender. Oddly, they seem to think it's okay for people like Israel Folau to be able to vilify people who are homosexual in the name of religion.
What effect do you think this may be having on young people struggling with their sexuality watching the debate and the news?
My concern is that those young people in strict faith communities may be at most risk here. Many in the broader community don't believe in hell and likely feel that Israel Folau's comments are ridiculous nonsense. However, it's vulnerable people in these faith communities who are indoctrinated to believe in hell who may fear reprisal, exclusion or even punishment if they act on or talk about their feelings of love for a person of the same sex. There's also the possibility that Folau's homophobic remarks may give license to schoolyard bullies, creating additional pressure on those vulnerable kids who need support from programs like Safe Schools and Respectful Relationships.
Ian Roberts, the first high-profile Australian football player to come out in 1994, had something to say about that on national TV Channel 9.
You know, and I'll say it to the camera now. I mean, I do feel sorry for Israel, but there are consequences to your actions and reactions, you know. But it's these types of comments and these off-the-cuff remarks when you have young people and vulnerable people, kids in the suburbs who are dealing with their sexuality, confused, not knowing how to deal with it. These types of remarks can and do push people over the edge.
The case is also being discussed more widely in the media in the South Pacific region, and TV New Zealand's Tangata Pacifica program picked up on the story. Here is Samoan human rights advisor Tuiloma Lina Samu speaking on the show.
We have a saying in Samoa that says, e palama'a, e le palaupu. So rocks and stones that we know are very hearty material will rot before the power of words does. So for somebody who is in a position of power and influence and fame and recognition, it's really important that they think very carefully about what they say that could impact people negatively and harm people.
Michael Barnett.
I honestly believe most Australians are not focused on the Israel Folau case. There would be rugby fans wishing he was back in the game. Human rights advocates are hoping for justice against people intolerant of homosexuality. Religious hardliners are wishing for stronger protections for hate speech. And of course, advocates of workplace rights are closely following the case. The divisive and optional Marriage Equality Postal Survey in 2017 showed that of the millions of respondents, 62% supported marriage equality,
Since then, there's been no public backlash against the change in law allowing same-sex and gender-diverse couples to get married. It's evident from the withdrawal of sponsorship by the corporate world that homophobia tarnishes brands. That's clearly why Rugby Australia felt it appropriate to enforce an anti-homophobia clause in Folau's contract. It's also due to programs like Pride in Diversity that rank corporates on how LGBTIQ plus friendly and inclusive they are. Together with CEOs and governance bodies that walk their talk on inclusion that aid in determining where best to spend their sponsorship dollar. It seems contradictory of the religious right to support discrimination against sexual minorities, but not, for example, against women.
We've just had the re-election of a Conservative government in Australia. The Prime Minister himself is a fundamentalist Christian and has the ear of a vocal Conservative group known as the Australian Christian Lobby. Where do you see things headed now in terms of religious, educational or sporting bodies being able to actively discriminate against LGBTIQ plus minorities if it does not fit in with their Christian beliefs?
I'd expect the law of Australia to treat all religions and people of all religious faiths equally, and alongside those people for whom faith is not a part of their lives. At present, religions enjoy certain exemptions under the law where they can actively discriminate against LGBTIQ plus and other people. You know, I'd be horrified if these exemptions were expanded beyond faith-based institutions, particularly in a secular country where there is supposed to be separation of church and state.
The decision in what is being seen as a legal test case in Australia now rests with Fair Work Australia. If Folau is successful, this could put employers in a very difficult position, trying to balance freedom of religious expression with workplace discrimination laws protecting LGBTIQ plus people. This is Barry Mackay in Sydney for This Way Out, and I'll leave the last word to Michael Barnett.
I suspect that it's unlikely sporting bodies will be allowed to discriminate against people on the grounds of their sexual orientation or affirmed gender identity for reasons of religious beliefs, but under a government led by an evangelical Christian Prime Minister who's prepared to, as he stated publicly and in his own words, burn for you, a phrase used by Pentecostal Christians to denote strenuous service for Christ, anything could be possible.
Israel Folau is continuing his assault on LGBTQ rights. In a June 16th sermon posted to Facebook by the Truth of Jesus Christ Church in Kenthurst, he gave the devil credit for marriage equality as well as the right of trans children to determine their identity. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Sarah Sweeney and Wenzel Jones, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Barry Mackay. John Farnham and Tina Arena performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, John Beaupre, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 3MGB Malakuta, Victoria, Trans 104.7 FM Broward County, Florida, KUNM Albuquerque, New Mexico, and some 200 stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Now y'all stay tuned.